So we have another double parsha this week, Achrei Mais and Kedeshim. And we're going to talk a little bit about the first of them, Achrei Mais. The parsha begins, Daber al Aaron Achicha, v'al Yavai b'chal Eis al HaKedesh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu to tell his brother Aaron not to come in at any time to the Kedesh. In describing the Avodah of Yom HaKippurim, which is a unique opportunity that the Kohen Gadol is granted to enter Lifnai v'Lifnim, he's allowed to come into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now, that's not a small thing. That's a huge opportunity, a huge invitation, and a huge responsibility to come mamish in a place that is the inner sanctum of the Rabbeinu Shlom, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina is concentrated in, and that normally you would never ever be able to think about entering into that portal of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina. But Aaron HaKayin was told that not only he, but all future Kayanim Gedalim will be allowed to enter. And this is what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Aaron, that you will be allowed to enter, but not every time. Al Yavei B'chal Eis Al HaKadosh. You can't go just any time to the Kadosh, but you have only the ability to go at unique opportunities. B'zayis Yavei Al Aaron Al Kadosh. When you do come in, you have to have a whole Avaida. There's a process that has to be done. It can't be just helter-skelter. Whenever you want to come in, you'd be allowed to come in. And when you don't want to come in, it has to be with certain rules, with certain regulations, and you have to abide by them, because if you don't, you're going to die. There's a very well-known sefer called the Chaye Adam. The Chaye Adam was written by a very big Talmud Chacham. His name was Rabbi Avram Gansfried. And I'm sorry, Rabbi Avram Danzig, excuse me. I was mixing him up with the Baal Kitzur Shulchan Aruch from Shlema Gansfried. And I understand why my wires got crossed in my brain, because the Chaye Adam and the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch were very similar in the style of Sefer Halacha that they created. What they did was they made a digest of all of the relevant halachas that were pertinent to a yid on a daily basis, sort of like a Shulchan Aruch, but a very summarized Shulchan Aruch, exactly what a yid needs to do. And both of these Sfarim, the Chaye Adam and the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, became huge bestsellers. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch was arguably the most published sefer of all since it was printed, besides, of course, for Sidurim and Chumash and maybe some Agadas, but the most popular sefer for many, many centuries was the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. And the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch of Shlomo Gansfried really was following in the footsteps that was already paved by a predecessor called the Chaye Adam. The Chaye Adam was the Kitzur before the Kitzur was written. And many old-time Yidden still remember that the time that the Chaye Adam reigned supreme, before the Kitzur. Kitzur was like more of a modern edition of this idea, but the original concept to make one sefer with a codification of all of the relevant halachas for a Yid was really done by Rabbi Avram Danzig, the Baal Chaye Adam. My father, Alav Shalom, was a very big chassid of the Chaye Adam. He loved learning that sefer, whereas most people, if they're going to learn something at the Shabbos table, and like, halacha, they would probably choose Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. My father always insisted on learning or having me read from the Chaye Adam before, you know, on most Shabbosos. And when I was masvid my father, when I gave a eulogy over him, So I mentioned that my father's favorite sefer is the Chaye Adam. He knew it cold, and he learned it constantly, and every Shabbos this was the go-to sefer. After the Levaya was over, we went downstairs. The Hesped was on the second floor of the particular building, and went downstairs waiting for the hearse to take us to the Beis Olam. and some yid that happened to be at the Levaya, who I had no idea who he was, I never saw him before and I never saw him since, he came over to me and he said that you gave a beautiful hesped about your father, and you should know that today is the yard site of the Chayei Adam. So it had special significance to me. I don't know who this person was. Maybe it was the Chayei Adam himself that came and told me that. But this was the story. So the Chayei Adam wrote a companion volume to this Sefer Chayei Adam called the Chachmas Adam, which is more halachas, more Yerudea halachas, other halachas that are anyway, it's a companion volume. It's not the Chayei Adam, it's the Chachmas Adam. At the end of the Sefer Chachmas Adam, in the halachas of Avelos, all the way at the end, he brings something that he heard b'shem his mechutin. Who was his mechutin? Who is a person that his children married into the other person's children? The Gra. The Chayei Adam was a mechutin with a Gra. Exactly how I think his grandchild was married to a child of the Melnagain, or maybe the opposite. I'm not sure exactly. I could tell you, but I don't remember offhand. But be it as it may, he was a mechutin with a Melnagain. He brings in the back of his sefer a chiddush that he heard b'shem his mechutin hagain hachasin mareina rav Eliyahu of Vilna. And the side that he brought out from the Vilna Gaon, I'm not going to get into all the proofs, but the Reader's Digest of what the Gaon said was the following Bam Chiddush, something that no one, I shouldn't say no one ever said, because it's really, it's Mefurish and a Medrash. And I'll read you the Medrash, and you'll wonder like why anyone would say anything else but this pshat of the Gaon. But the Gaon said the following pshat in explaining these psukim. The first thing that is difficult about these psukim is that you'd think if this was a description of coming in to the inner sanctum and the whole process on Yom Kippur, which is what every school child thinks. Any child today in yeshiva whose rabbi is teaching them about Achrei Mais is talking about Yom Kippur. When the Kohen Gadol comes in on Yom Kippur and Pamachas Bashana, one time a year you're allowed to come Lufnai V'Lufnim, you're allowed to come into the inner sanctum. You have to do it with a certain avodah. You have to bring the Kafu Machta, you have to bring blood, you have to juggle certain things and bring coals and take them out. And the Ketores, there's a whole process. We read about it on Yom Kippur itself in the Musaf of Chazaras Hashatz. It goes into all the specifics. There was a whole Seder HaAvodah of Yom Kippurim. So we're talking about Yom Kippur, right? That's the simple pshat in these psukim. I'm going to tell you the halachas of Yom Kippur. Just be careful. Don't try this at home. Don't do this every day of the year. You have to do it very specifically at a very certain time on the holiest day of the year, the holiest man, the holiest place, converging as one. That's the Avodah of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippurim. But the Vilna Gaon notices that it doesn't mention anything about the date of Yom Kippur or about Yom Kippur itself until later in the parasha, like towards the end of the whole Avodah. It says that this is the day that you should do it on, Basir, B'chaydesh, whatever, B'chaydesh Hashvi, whatever it is, and that's the day that you should, but it doesn't introduce it as Yom Kippur. It says this is the time that it should be brought, but all the way at the end of the parasha. And a few other examples that the Gaon was bothered by, and there is also a medrash that is very conclusive evidence that what the Gaon says is 1,000% true. Not that he needs a medrash, he could say it on his own, it would still be 1,000% true, but it helps to have a nice medrash. And listen to what he says. It's true that all future Kaihanim Gedolim only do this Avodah of Lefnai V'Lefnim, coming into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippurim. That's true. We can all agree on that. And that's why the Parsha says it. But Aaron HaKayin was unique in that he was allowed to enter into the Kodesh HaKadoshim any day that he wanted. If today, on Erev Shabbos, Parshas Achrei Mes Kedoshim, about, you know, half a year out of Yom HaKippurim, Aaron HaKohen wakes up this fine morning and says, you know what, I'm in the mood to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim today. Nobody will stop him. He has carte blanche. He has the ability to walk in to the Kodesh HaKadoshim anytime that he wants. Not just Yom HaKippurim, but every single day that Aaron HaKohen wants, he's allowed to do it as long as he does the Avodah. I mean, he can't just walk in and take a look around and walk out. No. If he wants to come in, he must follow the Seder Avodah of Yom HaKippurim. He's got to bring whatever he has to bring on Yom Kippur in and take out and act in a certain way inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim and prepare for it. Whatever it has to be done, he could do it. But it has to be al Seder Avodah. But if he's prepared to go through the Seder Avodah Yom HaKippurim, absolutely, go ahead. You're allowed to. Aaron HaKohen, only Aaron HaKohen, was given this special dispensation of being allowed to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim whenever he wants. It's a tremendous Kiddush. And this is not Pshuto Shel Mikra. This is not something that you would, and this is not the way Rashi learns. If you go through the Rashi's on this parasha, you see clearly, Rashi right away says, this is all Yom Kippur. This is taking place in Yom Kippur. B'zayis Yav Aaron on Yom Kippur. Don't make any mistake about it. It's specific to Yom Kippur, this Avodah. The Gaon says no. The Gaon says it's every single day. Whenever Aaron wants, as long as he does, I'll say the Avodah, he's able to come in and out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim whenever he wants. And if you say, well, this is, where did he get this from? Like I said, there's a Medrash. If you look up the Medrash, Medrash Rabbah, Parsha Chaf Aleph, Amar Abyudin Bar Simen, Yesh Es L'Shiva Shanim. It says, don't come in whenever you want. So it says, the Medrash says, there is an ace, there's a time set every 7 years. V'yesh ace l'shivim shana. And maybe it's once every 70 years. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lo ace l'shana. It's not once a year. V'loy l'zayin shanim. And it's not every 7 years that you have this opportunity to go l'fnai v'lefnim. Ela b'chol sha'a shu'raitze l'chnais Yichnais, any moment that he wants to come in, he has license to come in. Rak sheyikanes kaseder hazeh. With one provision, he must follow the Seder HaVodah of Yom HaKippurim. If you follow the Seder HaVodah, then you're allowed to come in, Aaron, whenever you want. But only Aaron HaKohen. This is something specific to Aaron HaKohen. And it doesn't apply to any, all future Kohanim Gadolim, only Yom Kippur. Aaron HaKohen had the ability to come in whenever he wanted. This is what the Chayadam brings from his Mechutin, the Vilna Gaon. It's a very reliable source. Not all of the Gaons that we have are necessarily accurately sourced or attributed to the Gaon. And there are Sfarim that try to work out exactly the Gaons that we know, because the Gaon really didn't write down anything himself. A lot of it was from Talmidim or from Talmidim's Talmidim. A lot of it was Mipi Hashmua. So a lot of it got mixed in the, lost in the shuffle of time. It's not clear. Sometimes, you know, you'll attribute it to a Gaon, but really it's something else. A lot of times you'll find two sources for a similar concept. One might be a Gaon, and one might be the Chanukah Satir of the Rebbe of Eshel, or it might be a Blevitzmi Barditchev, or it might be a different Litvisha Gaon, and things get mixed up, you know, over time. You don't remember, you just, somebody say, I think it's a Gaon, and it became the next sefer that's printed, it's B'Shem the Gaon. So you have to be careful when people are quoting things B'Shem the Gaon. In fact, after the Gaon was Nifter, the Bestin in Vilna made a special gezeira, a cherem, against anyone publishing things B'Shem the Gaon unless it had the approval of the children of the Gaon, people that knew the Gaon well, because otherwise we're going to dilute the purity of what the Messiah from the Gaon is. Here we have something that the Chayadim himself wrote, that it was, he heard from his Mechut and the Gaon, or he heard B'Shem, his Mechut and the Gaon. It's a very reliable Gaon. It's a reliably sourced Gaon, and it's something that, you know, is Emes Lamita. There was one thing that bothered me about this Gaon, not bothered me in a philosophical way, but just as a curiosity, perhaps, why was Aaron HaKayin zeiche to this? If this is something that is acceptable, that a Kayin Gadol, a very holy man, would be allowed to come into the Lifnai V'Lifnim whenever he wants, any day of the week, any day of the year, so then why would it just be Aaron HaKayin? Why not his predecessor? Why not his successor? Or why not some random Kayin Gadol in the Bayis Rishon, in the Bayis Sheni? Why is it something that's specific to Aaron HaKayin that he gets this din, but nobody else? I think that's a fair curiosity, at least, to have. It's not going to undermine the Vard. I'm just curious, like, what Aaron did to deserve this. Why did Aaron get this covet that he could go in Lifnai V'Lifnim as long as he does the Avodas Yom Kippur any day that he wanted? So I was thinking that there's a Vart that the Meshech Chachma says, and it's a very foundational Vart. It's something that we should all know. That on Yom Kippur and Davening, we say, Ki ata solchan li Yisrael, u'machalan l'shifte yeshurun b'chol dar v'dar. We title HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a double way, in a very interesting couching in interesting terms. You are a solchan li Yisrael. You are the forgiver of Yisrael. Umachlan, and you are a forgiver. Slicha, mechila are sort of synonyms. And you are a machlan l'shifte Yeshurun, to the tribes of Yeshurun b'chol dar v'dar. What does that mean? Seems like redundant. You're a solchan li Yisrael, umachlan l'shifte Yeshurun. So what the Meshech Chachma wants to say is that there's two root averis that Klal Yisrael are stained with. One is a terrible aver ben adam lamakim, a historic avera, a cosmic aver ben adam lamakim, that we are always in need of atonement, and all of the averis, every time we sin ben adam lamakim, we could trace it to this avera. And we'll get to what that avera is in a second. And then there's another historic avera that was perpetrated, Bein Adam L'Chaverai, which is also the root cause of all of the subsequent averas that transpire between man and his friend. What is the great avera that was done, Bein Adam L'Makim? Cheta Egel. Cheta Egel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was very upset. He wanted to destroy us because we breached the relationship between us and him by creating some idol and dancing around it, and it was intended to be a substitute for Moshe Rabbeinu, and it was a terrible avera, a terrible stain on our reputation, and for all times we have to deal with this. And all averas that are Bein Adam L'Makim are all sourced in this avera, and we have to try to rub out the stain, cleanse that stain. And then there's another ched, and that's Mechiras Yosef. When we sold our brother Yosef, when the Shvatim sold their brother, that was a terrible avera, Bein Adam L'Chaverai. That was a quintessential no-no between brothers, between Shvatim. And we have to pay the price for that as well. Every time that we do an avera, Bein Adam L'Chaverai, it's rooted in that avera. And so we need a mechila, we need to try to work on cleansing the root averis, the slicha and mechila that's necessary to be attained from these two averis. Says the Meshech Chachma that's what this tefillah is. Ki ata solchan l'Yisrael. You are the forgiver of Yisrael. Yisrael is a reference to the Chet HaEgel. Because it says, Eile lehecha Yisrael. This is your God, O Israel. That was said by the Chet HaEgel, as they were performing the Chet HaEgel. So you are the Sochan, you're the one that has the power to cleanse the Chet HaEgel. Umachlan, and you have the power to be Meichel, the Shifte Yeshurun. That's a reference to the Shvatim, to the tribes of Klal Yisrael that breached their brotherhood when they sold Yosef down to Mitzrayim. So the Avodah of Yom Kippur really is to work on cleansing these two sins. And if you're able to cleanse these two sins, if you're able to be the astringent that would be able to scrub away these sins, then you would be able to have the entire Kedusha and Tara of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is a day that we're supposed to be free of sin at the end of the day. How do we do that? We have to go to the root cause and clean ourselves up in these two root causes, in the Chet HaEgel and the Chet of the Mechiras Yosef. Who was the greatest Yid in the world that was super qualified, eminently qualified, to cleanse these sins? And I would submit to you that it was Aaron HaKohen. Aaron HaKohen had a little bit of involvement in the Chet HaEgel, but he himself worked on himself, and even though he was scared, the Pasuk says that you should go and bring a certain carbon on the first day of the Mishkan's building. He was afraid. He saw the chatas. He saw that he was still culpable. But Moshe Rabbeinu says, "No, don't be afraid. Lekach nivcharta." So Aaron HaKohen really worked hard on cleansing the avera of the Chet HaEgel. Furthermore, Aaron HaKohen was the greatest Yid ben Adam L'Chaveray. We know all the great legends about Aaron HaKohen. Ayev Shalom, Raydev Shalom, Ayev Esabriyos. He loved his fellow men. He brought peace between man and his wife, between brothers. So he was the bridge that was able to bring together and to undo the damage of the Mechiras Yosef. Aaron HaKohen was the quintessential Ish Yom HaKippurim. He was the person that was able to fit the role that was necessary for Yom Kippur perfectly. He was the person that was the agent to bring Slicha liYisrael and Mechila leShifte Yeshurun by his very Mahus, by who he was, his persona cried Yom HaKippurim. And so perhaps these facts caused him to be, like I said, the man of Yom Kippur. He was the personification of Yom Kippur. If he was the personification of Yom Kippur, then I think we could make the following hypothesis that perhaps every day was Yom Kippur as far as Aaron was concerned. The reason why he was able to every day, whenever he wanted, enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim is because it was Yom Kippur by him every day. Today is Yom Kippur by Aaron. On Sunday is Yom Kippur by Aaron. Because what is Yom Kippur? Yom Kippur is a day that you work on Bein Adam LaMakim, Adam LaChaver, the Chet HaEgel, the Chet HaMechiras Yosef. Aaron was doing that constantly. That was his nature. That was what he was all about. He was Yom Kippur. He was like a walking Yom Kippur. He's a walking Yom Kippur. He had the license to do the Avodas Yom HaKippurim every day of the year. And I want to take from this Yesod something that we can perhaps use in our own life. There were Yidden that were also Ish Yom HaKippurim. They were people that were what I would call a Yom Kippur Yid. They were Yidden that lived Yom Kippur Dik their entire year, not just Yom Kippur. You see, the way we act, or at least the way I act, is that you get 364 days of being a regular person, and then you have one day a year of being a malach. All of a sudden you put your kittel on, and some of you put a big white yarmulk on, and a white tie, and you take your machzor, you cry a little bit, you clap al chayk. That's my Yom Kippur. Now I could go and party. Matzah Yom Kippur, let's go. Got the mechila, slicha, kapara, that's it. In fact, the Gemara says in Yuma that there is the hasatan is gematria 354, I believe. Because, no, is that right? 354. Because there's 355 days in the Jewish calendar. 354, the Satan gets to reign. It's geshmak. The Satan is mamish, you know, pumping us up. We're doing our thing. There's one day a year to less reshusa l'satan l'stanuni. There's no, he doesn't have permission to be mastin. He doesn't have permission to prosecute us. He sort of fades away on Yom Kippur, but he comes back, Baruch Hashem, Matzah Yom Kippur, as soon as the Burachim starts, you know, he's back. In fact, we start clapping You know, we say Slach Lanu a minute after Yom Kippur. We're already back in the fold. Slach Lanu, Yigad Mechalanu. What do you mean? I thought I just got all my sins cleansed. The answer is, it's true, but that was Yom Kippur. Now is Matzah Yom Kippur. We're back in the world of the Satan again. We have to say Slach Lanu Avinu. We're already not having Kavanah Shmoneh Esrei. I'm thinking about my cake. I'm thinking about my bagel. I'm trying to, you know, build the sukkah already. I'm like, I'm busy already with the year. I'm out of Yom Kippur. Tzaddikim don't do it that way. Tzaddikim, every day by them is Bebechinas Yom Kippurim. Every day is Yom Kippur by them. The great Rabbi Saul Salantib, for example, he was the father of the Musar movement, but he was a Tzaddik Yisayid Eilam. Obviously, if you're the founder of the Musar movement, presumably you have to be the Tzaddik Yisayid Eilam. You can't found the Musar movement if you're not the greatest Baal Musar. And he was. And he used to say the following thing. He says, whenever I have a question that I need to deal with, I have to make an important decision. We all have important decisions we have to make, right? What should we be doing with our life? Where should we be going in the summer? What kind of job should I be going for? What's my career? What type of girl should I marry? What type of how should I behave? How should I not behave? All the decisions that we're constantly making, the small decisions and the big decisions. Rabbi Saul Salantib says, every time I have to make a decision, I think to myself, what would my decision be if I was considering this on Ne'ilah of Yom HaKippurim? Think about that a second. If let's say you have a very big Nisayin in life, you're not sure whether or not you should cheat on your income taxes or not. Okay, I think yes, no, back and forth. What would you do if now is Ne'ilah? Now is Ne'ilah, and you thought about that. Well, of course, I'm going to be a good Jew. If you're thinking about, you know, going into like a business that's a little shady and like it could cause a tremendous chil Hashem, what would you do? Well, I don't know. Today, maybe I would do it. I need the money. It sounds good. By Ne'ilah Yom Kippur, you're not going to do that. If I have to decide whether or not I should go to watch a certain movie or not, that's not a kosher movie. I don't know. It's sad to say no, it's sad to say yes. I don't know. What would you do on Ne'ilah Yom Kippur? What would you... Obviously, no. Rabbi Saul Salantir says that every decision that I make, I always filter it through this question, what would I say to myself if now was Ne'ilah Yom Kippur? You're screaming, Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Hu Elokim, Shema Yisrael, Baruch Shem. What would you think? What would be the answer to that question? He says, whatever I would decide by Ne'ilah of Yom Kippur, that's what I decide today. But it's not Yom Kippur. I don't care. I'm a Yom Kippur Yid. Yom Kippur is not one day of the year that I have to be a good boy and then the rest of the day, you know, I could give a head fake to God and act normal. If I'm a Yom Kippur Yid on Yom Kippur, I should be a Yom Kippur Yid the entire year. Rav Gifter used to say that he starts doing tshuva. You know, some people start doing tshuva on Rosh Hashanah. Some people, better people, start doing it by Slichas a couple of days before Rosh Hashanah. Really good people do tshuva on Rosh Chodesh Elul, and they start going from Rosh Chodesh Elul. Some people wait all the way to Yom Kippur, to Ne'ilah. Rav Gifter said, I start tshuva as soon as Yom Kippur is over. As soon as Yom Kippur is over, I start my tshuva process all over again, waiting for the next Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. It's Yom Kippur Yid. The whole year by him was Yom Kippur. The Brisker Rav, the great Reb Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, was walking. He had health issues, and he had to take walks. So on Yom Kippur, he felt like he should get some fresh air and take a walk. So a Talmud came over to him and says, Rebbe, it doesn't pass for you to take a walk at Yom Kippur. You're the Brisker Rav. You don't take a walk on Yom Kippur. You stay in shul. You want to go to a room and put your head down. You don't take a walk. It's Yom Kippur. How's it going to look? I don't know who would have the chutzpah to say that to him, but this is how the story goes. Somebody said to the Brisker Rav, it doesn't, maybe you just made a face like that. You know, you walk Yom Kippur like Brisker Rav. So listen to what the Brisker Rav said. He said, what I do every day of the year, I do on Yom Kippur. If it's good enough for me to do every day of the year, I'll do it on Yom Kippur also. And what I won't do on Yom Kippur, I won't do the rest of the year. You hear? If I do something every day of the year, then that's fine. I've deemed that appropriate. If it's appropriate for me to do on Erev Shabbos, Parsha, Sachem, Eskedeshim, it's perfectly appropriate for me to do. I take a walk on Friday afternoon or on a Tuesday morning. I could take a walk on Yom Kippur. Obviously, I feel that it's appropriate to do, and so I'll do it on Yom Kippur. And what I won't do on Yom Kippur, if it's something that I feel should not be done on Yom Kippur, let's say it's inappropriate to take a walk on Yom Kippur, I wouldn't be doing it the whole year either. Meaning, there's no difference to certain Yidden between Yom Kippur and the rest of the year. The whole year, 355 days of the year by them, is Bebuchinas Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is not one day on the calendar, Pam Achas Bashana, and the rest of the year is different, in stark contrast, because the rest of the year I'm human, Yom Kippur I become a Malach. No. If I'm a Malach on Yom Kippur, I should be a Malach the whole year. And if I'm not a Malach on Yom Kippur, then I shouldn't be a Malach. It goes together. It's a Chativa Achas. It's one piece. The whole year should be the same thing. You're not. It's not like, you know, like the stock market, like ups and downs and sideways. It has to be a consistency. If you're on a certain madrig, obviously we're not maybe talking to ourselves. We're not holding there. But it's just an important insight to know that there are Yidden that feel that way, that are Yom Kippur dick the entire year, and it sets the bar pretty high. But at least we see a bar there. At least we see that there's something to aspire to, if we're not holding there yet, but maybe someday we can, or maybe we can improve our rest of the year so that it's a little bit more Yom Kippurdik. So we feel a little bit pure and holy, and we're like Malachim on Yom Kippur, we should be Malachim a little bit more the rest of the year as well. Like Aaron HaKohen, he was the Ishem HaKippurim, and he was able to do the Avodas Yom HaKippurim every single day. And that's how we could be also. We could be doing an Avodas Yom HaKippurim every single day of the year, feeling Yom Kippurdik, understanding that the same Rabbeinu Shalom that's here in Yom Kippur is here now. And if it's something that's inappropriate Yom Kippur, I shouldn't be doing it today either. And if it's something that's appropriate to be done today, I should be able to do it on Yom Kippur. There's no difference. Yom Kippur is a very special day, as we know, but it's a special day not just on Yom Kippur, but it's a special day and it should be yearned for throughout the year. That's also making us Yom Kippur Yidden. If we're looking forward and anticipating Yom Kippur today, when it's a time that no one's thinking about Yom Kippur, who's thinking about Yom Kippur today? But especially we're laying Achrei Mais. There's an element of appreciating the gift that Yom Kippur is throughout the whole year. Rabbeinu Yaina, for example, the great Rabbeinu Yaina in Shari Tshuva, Dalet Ches, says that if somebody commits a negative transgression, somebody is over an Avera during the course of the year. Let's say today I did an Avera, I spoke Lashon Hara this morning. Or I looked at something I wasn't supposed to. Or I forgot to bench. Let's say I did that. So I should be looking forward the entire year, anxiously awaiting the approach of Yom Kippur, when I'll be able to reconcile with the Rabbeinu Shleilam. If I forgot to do something, if I neglected to do a mitzvah, or if I did a plain-out Avera, I should be nervous and I should be anxious because I need a Yom Kippur to be mechaper for that. So the whole year, I should be thinking about Yom Kippur. My mind should be saturated with Yom Kippur. And you know what he says? He explains that that's why we celebrate on Erev Yom Kippur with the Seudas Mitzvah. Now we all think about that Seudas HaMafsekes and Erev Yom Kippur. That's a time that we just it's a preparation for Yom Kippur, right? We're fasting the whole next day, tonight and tomorrow, so we have to eat a good meal on Erev Yom Kippur, and everybody's busy, you know, to take their pills and the watermelons and the, you know, with all their, you know, their old wives' tales about what's going to make the fast easier, harder. Can't eat salty things, you should eat salty, you should have water, too much water. Everybody has tyra about what, that's the big problem, that's the big thing about the Suda. Says Rabbeinu Yaina, you know what that Suda is on Erev Yom Kippur? It's a Sudas Mitzvah. Because you're so happy. It's like, you know, a bris, a pidgin aben, a bar mitzvah, a chasna, an Erev Yom Kippur Suda. Why? Because I'm overjoyed that I finally made it to the finish line. I'm about to come into the world of Yom Kippur that I've been so desperately anticipating the entire year. Every day, I've been thinking and dreaming and longing for Yom Kippur. Because I need that. Yom Kippur is a day that will atone for all of the averus that I don't want to go up to El Mames saddled with a zillion averus. I want to come up free. Yom Kippur is the day that gives us that freedom, that gives us that purity. Lifnei Hashem Titaru, it's a special day, but you have to anticipate that day eagerly, and you make a Sudas Mitzvah on that day. I saw in the Machzor of Rabbi Yosher Ber Soloveitchik, he brings a very beautiful story that one time there was a, you know, the Rothschild family in Europe were like, they were very wealthy Jews, and they were very powerful. And every government, what happened was there was like the patriarch of the Rothschild family, and he had a whole number of sons, all very bright and capable, and each of them moved to like a different country in Europe. And, you know, so one was in England, one was in Germany, one was in France. And they basically created like a global empire of finance. Millionaires, and they were the people that lent money to governments and financed war efforts. And everybody, the Rothschilds were like, I visited the grave of a lot of the Rothschilds. If you ever go to Frankfurt in Germany, in the same cemetery where Shem Shmuel Fall Hirsch is buried and other Gedalim, the Staliner, the Yanuka of Stalin is buried there, and Reb Shlomo Breuer is buried there, and a number of other very famous Gedalim. So on the other side of the wall, there is a whole beautiful area, and it has the fanciest graves that you've ever seen. They're ornate, and they're like, you know, with flowers like chiseled in and just really spitz graves. If you're into graves, so you would love this place because you never saw fancier graves than this. Who are these graves? This is the Rothschild family. Their family was really based out of Frankfurt. In fact, they were big Hasidim of Shem Shmuel Fall Hirsch. They funded when he broke away from his community and he started his own, you know, frumer community. Called the IRG. His shul, Kalad HaShem, was basically funded in large part by the Rothschilds. So a lot of them are buried in the cemetery. So a lot of them ended up, unfortunately, not being from, but there were from branches of the family as well. And one of these from branches of the Rothschild family, one of them, I don't know exactly which one, but let's call him Baron Rothschild, so he had a guest over his house for Yom Kippur. And this is the story, I don't know if it's true or if it's apocryphal, but this is how it goes, that by the break on Yom Kippur, so they went home, and this guest, you know, came with Baron Rothschild, and they came into this big mansion that he lived in, and, you know, he thought he'd just lie down, you know, go to sleep for an hour until he had to go back to shul. And he was shocked when he comes into the dining room of this Rothschild's mansion. The table is set completely for like a yontif meal, and they have like beautiful china out and cutlery, and there were like challahs on the table, and there was a kiddush cup, flowers on the table, crystal. It was like a yontif meal. And this guest was like getting a little bit nervous, like, hello, it's Yom Kippur. Like, I hope we're not actually about to do what I think we're about to do. Can't eat on Yom Kippur. What's going on over here? And then this baron picks up the Kiddush cup, and it's really getting scary for this guest. And he said the following: Master of the universe, before we eat, we should make Kiddush. Since today is Yom Kippur and we are forbidden to eat and drink so as to afflict our soul, we will avoid eating and drinking and return to Shul to continue with our prayers. What's the point of the story? Rabbi Yehoshua Ber is using it for a different thing, that there's an inyan on Yom Kippur to be ma'ane yourself. There's a certain type of inui, of like cutting up vegetables on Yom Kippur in order to like make it a little harder for you to go through the fast because you're getting hungry. So he was using an al derech that. I wanted to say al derech of Inyayna, that there really should be a great seuda that's made on Yom Kippurim. It's the greatest day of the year. It's the happiest day of the year in a certain sense. You're getting rid of all of your sins. If I would say, you know, give me $1 million if you had it, and you know, and I'll get rid of all your sins, I think you would give me $1 million. Why not? It's to get rid of all my sins? Well, you don't need $1 million. You just have to get to Yom Kippur, do the right thing in Yom Kippur, stay away from doing Averis, daven a little bit, have a little kavana, you know, klap some alchets, have your retshuva, and you're good. You don't need $1 million. It's a tremendous simcha. It needs a suda. The suda, says Rabbi Yain, is really before Yom Kippur. That's the suda mafsekas. It's a great suda. But in theory, we should have a suda on Yom Kippur itself. We can't. We should. We can't. But we have to consider it as if we should. And that's what Rothschild was doing. I always said that, you know, the Gemara says we don't say Hallel on Yom Kippur. Because Sifrei Chaim, Sifrei Mesim, Psuchim Lefanav, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sitting in din, and he has all the books of life and death open. It's a frightening day, Yom Kippur. It's not a time of simcha, so you don't say Hallel. But I was always thinking, let's say not for that reason. Let's say we would be allowed to say Hallel. Could you imagine a more beautiful Hallel than the Hallel that we would say on Rosh Hashanah on Yom Kippur? It would be the most glorious Hallel. You're singing praise to Hashem, Ki chilatzta nafshi mimaves. You're taking my life out of death's grasp. I should be dead, but you're keeping me alive. It's the most beautiful time to say Hallel. Okay, we can't because it's a technical reason we can't say Hallel, because it's a time that you have to be afraid. But in theory, Hallel is deserved. Hallel is it's warranted on Yom Kippur. It would be amazing. Imagine the beautiful songs that the Shliach Tzibur would have the opportunity to sing with the Tzibur on Yom Kippur, were it not for a technical reason of Sifrei Chaim and Sifrei Mesim. Yom Kippur is the most amazing day of the year. It's scary. It's true, it does have that element of Yira and Fachad, and we're not supposed to be really that happy because our lives are hanging in the balance, but at the same time, the opportunity that's presented to us in Yom Kippur is priceless. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter used to say, in fact, that if Yom Kippur were to occur only once in 70 years, in addition to wishing a person that he should live until 120, you would add another bracha. Now you say, how old are you? You know, you should live until 120, right? That's always, I may have asked him. That's a nice bracha to give somebody to live until 120, because that's how old Moshe Rabbeinu was when he died. So we don't want to go more than Moshe Rabbeinu, but 120. Rabbi Solzhenitsyn said, you would also give another bracha. You should be zeicha to make it to Yom Kippur. Every 70 years, Yom Kippur. Like it's sort of a great marker in time. Like I guess the closest example I could give is Birkas Hachama. Every 28 years you get to say a Birkas Hachama, and people discuss like how many Birkas Hachamas did you have? Did you have one? Did you have two? Did you have three? And some people have four, I guess. But if they're really, you know, make it tariqah, it's possible, theoretically. Imagine if, like, instead of Birkas Hachama every 28 years, you had Yom Kippur once every 70 years. But and everybody, like, the hype about Yom Kippur is, if you make it to Yom Kippur, you're good. You got, you know, slicha, mechila, kapara. You would give brachas, say, listen, I know that Yom Kippur is in 47 years. my bracha to you is you should make it, you should have a richas yom to make it to that Yom Kippur, because that Yom Kippur, if you make it there, you're good. So, Rabbi Yisrael Sanza says, but listen, we have Yom Kippur every year. We have Yom Kippur every year. Sort of is like a little bit, maybe that was the pshat in that medrash that we started with, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, lo yeis la shana, v'lo lezayin shanim, v'lo leshivim shanim. I'm not giving you Yom Kippur once every 7 years, once every 70 years. B'chalei sheyirtza, I'm making it accessible to you. Once a year you get Yom Kippur. It's a tremendous chus to have Yom Kippur once a year. But you have to live like a Yom Kippur to get it and appreciate it every day that I'm about to come to Yom Kippur. If I can make it 6 more months, boom, I got Yom Kippur. I want to end with a story that shows how Chabav Yom Kippur was to even very simple Jews. Not Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, not the Brisker Rav, but a very simple Jew. The Stipler had a grandson who was riding on a bus in Eretz Yisrael. And an older, elderly Russian Yid gets on the bus and sits right next to him. And it wasn't even clear to the Stipler's grandson this man was religious. Well, the way that he was dressed, it's an old Russian Yid, he wasn't sure if he was even religious. And shortly after boarding, these two Yidden, the Stipler's grandson and this Russian Jew, begin having a conversation. And the older man was speaking a Russian-accented Yiddish. And he made the following claim to the Stipler's grandson. He said, Ich mit Yom Kippur zenin eins. Says, me with Yom Kippur are one. Me and Yom Kippur, we're buds. We're one. We're very close. We're very tight, me and Yom Kippur. So he, you know, it caught the curiosity of the Stipler's grandson. Like, what do you mean by that? How are you and Yom Kippur one? So the man explained that I was in Russia in the army under Stalin. And of course, there was very difficult conditions. The Russian army, many, you know, people died for doing anything remotely religious. They wanted to abolish God from Russia. That was what the, you know, Lenin and Stalin, communism, that was the, you know, you worship the state, you don't worship God. God is, you know, terrible. You can't have any. And they clamped down on Shabbos and Mila v'chule. So this Yid was in the Russian army, and he knew that Yom Kippur was about to come. And he decided that he did not want to work on Yom Kippur. And it was a very simple Yid. I don't know if he went to yeshiva at all. I don't know if he knew Aleph and Abayz, but he knew Yom Kippur. And he says, I did not want to work on Yom Kippur. Now, there was only one way to get a day off. There was only one way. You can't say I'm sick and I'm tired. They don't want to hear it. If they're chayshid that you're taking off because of Yom Kippur, they'll shoot you and, you know, and bury you in some unmarked grave. There was only one way to get a patur, and that is that there was a dentist, if you could call him that, on every Russian base. He wasn't a real dentist. He didn't know dentistry from a hole in the wall, but they called him the dentist. So if there was ever a dental problem, he would basically just take a pair of pliers and pull out the tooth that was bothering you, and that was it. So he said, and then of course, if you went to that dentist, then they didn't use Novocaine. You were in a lot of pain, no medicine, so they let you take off a day after you go to that dentist. So he went to the dentist that day, the day Erev Yom Kippur. And he told the dentist that my tooth is hurting me a lot. He says, which tooth is this tooth? Dentist says, you sure? It's not that tooth? No, it's this tooth. Okay. Takes out his rusty pair of pliers, puts it in the guy's mouth, and yanks the tooth out. And he says, you have no idea of the pain that was shooting through my entire body, every nerve in my entire mouth and my entire extended body was on fire, but I did it for Yom Kippur. I did it for Yom Kippur. Because that day I got to take off, I stayed in bed the whole Yom Kippur, and I didn't have to do any malacha on Yom Kippur. And then he said to the stipler's grandson, you want to see the tooth? You want to see where he pulled it out? So I was going to say, okay. So he opens up his mouth, he smiles, and the front six teeth were missing. He says, I was in the Russian army for 6 years. Every year before Yom Kippur, I did the same thing. He says, and tell me, am I not one with Yom Kippur? That's a Yom Kippur Yid. It's a Yid that understands the preciousness of Yom Kippur. Not just one time, six times he went through the same agony and he never regretted it. He was proud of it. And his life, every time he smiled, it was Yom Kippur took a smile. And every time he walked, and every time he talked, and every time he ate, it was the Yom Kippur Dikka experience, because he lived Yom Kippur. He was like Aaron HaKohen, the Ish Yom HaKippurim, going Lefnai V'Lefnim every single day. Whenever he wants, he was able to come before the Rebbeinu Shalom, because he lived Yom HaKippurim. B'zois Yavai Aaron Al HaKodesh. This is how Aaron is able to come El HaKodesh. You know how you come before the Rebbeinu Shalom? You come with Yom Kippur. You bring Yom Kippur to the party. Wherever you go, you bring Yom Kippur with you. That people, you walk into a dorm room, people see you, we have to stop speaking Lashon Hara, the Yom Kippur Yid is here. You remind people of Yom Kippur. You radiate the Kedushas Yom HaKippurim. Yom Kippur, I'm not going to speak Lashon Hara. Well, I'm not going to speak Lashon Hara if I'm in the presence of this guy. We know those types of guys. That when they're around, we just want to be good. It might be a Rebbe, but it might be a roommate. Or it might be a Russian Yid on a bus who is so simple and so pure with his emunah that it makes us all feel that we have so much to aspire to in our life. That's the goal of life, I guess. To be a Yom Kippur Dik, a Yid. To be a Yid that on Yom Kippur acts Yom Kippur Dik, and throughout the entire year always has Yom Kippur in his mind. Either because it's appropriate, I wouldn't do it on Yom Kippur, I shouldn't be doing it now, I wouldn't make that decision by Neil, I'm not going to make it today. Or that I'm just thinking always about Yom Kippur, like I got to get there because I need Yom Kippur. Trust me, I need Yom Kippur. When is Yom Kippur coming already? A lot of people dread Yom Kippur. It's like Tisha B'Av. It's like the worst day of the year. Like, let's get this thing over with. Once we get past Yom Kippur, we're good. There are other people that they cherish Yom Kippur. They look forward to it. My grandmother, Alei Shalom, used to tell me when I was a little kid, and I always remember it, that her favorite day of the year is Yom HaKippurim. I say, my day, did you say Purim? That's my favorite. No, I didn't say Purim. I said Yom HaKippurim. Yom HaKippurim, I said, you like Yom Kippur, but it's a day you got to fast, you got to wear, you know, slippers, you can't do anything fun, you can't, you know, it's so restrictive, Yom Kippur. What do you like about it? She says, are you kidding me? I don't have to worry about cooking. I don't have to worry about eating. I don't have to worry about drinking. I spend a day with my machzer, my tears, davening to the Rebbeinu Shalom, talking to him, confessing to him, expressing my dreams, my aspirations to him. There's no better day of the year than Yom Kippur. I look forward to it the whole year. That's Aaron HaKohen. That's B'zayis Yavai Aaron Al HaKadosh. This is the Chiddush of the Chayadim, of the Gain, that every day of the year Aaron HaKohen was given license to walk right in. As long as he does the Avodah Yisrael, you know why? Because every day was Yom Kippur in the world of Aaron HaKohen. No other Kohen Gadol could claim that, but Aaron HaKohen could. He was working on his Ben Adam LaChaveira, Ben Adam LaMakim. He was the embodiment of Yom HaKippurim, and he was able to bring Yom Kippur in Lefnai V'Lefnim every time. And there are Yidden, and we could be those Yidden as well, that feel Kedushas Yom HaKippurim not just once a year, but every day and every minute of the day. It's a bar that is very high for us, but we could accomplish it, I think, if we tried, if we think, if we dream, if we aspire. Yom Kippur, Yom Kippur, Yom Kippur. That's our goal. To get there, to feel it today, to work on our tshuva already, like Rav Gifter a whole year, to be an Ish Yom HaKippurim. Everybody say have a beautiful Shabbos.